The King's Justice. Spoke to the king myself at length. Isher lounged on the front bench as if he was in his drawing room. Orso's every bit his father's son.
None too bright.
The lord's round was full, but Barazin hardly seemed to care if they were overheard.
And ever so easily led.
Open disdain for not one, but two kings felt a mite disloyal to Leo, especially here at the heart of government, attending a trial where a man's life would hang in the balance. His mother would have been most displeased to hear it. But then, sooner or later, a man has to stop making everything about pleasing his mother.
Last year, outside Valbec, Crown Prince also presided over the summary hanging of 200 supposed revolutionaries, said Isher, without trial or process.
Their gibbeted bodies were used to decorate the road to Adua.
Barazin stuck his tongue out and mimed a hanging.
As a warning to other commoners.
Now they want to do the same to a member of the Open Council.
As a warning to other noblemen.
Huygen leaned in close.
He may have inherited his mother's mercy along with his father's brains.
Barazin's eager whisper could scarcely contain his amusement.
He certainly got her weakness for the ladies.
By the dead, breathed Leo. He found neither the Queen Dowager's preferences nor the King's brutality a laughing matter. Isher shook his well-groomed white head.
At this rate, not even the best of us will be safe.
It's the best who are in the most danger, said Huygen.
Barazin grunted agreement.
Wetterlant hasn't a bloody chance. Bet you they present no evidence at all.
But why? Asked Leo, struggling to find a position on the hard bench where his leg didn't nag at him.
Wetterlant has no heir, said Isher. So his estates will be forfeit, and the crown will sweep them up, you'll see.
Leo stared in disbelief at the chamber's stained-glass windows. The proudest moments of Union history. Harald the Great bringing the three kingdoms of Middleland together. Arnold the Just throwing off tyranny. Casimir the Steadfast taking law to the lawless in England. The Open Council lifting King Jezal to the throne, uniting behind him to defeat the Gurkish. The noble heritage his father once loved to talk of. Could the corruption really have spread so deep?
They wouldn't dare, he breathed. In front of the whole Open Council?
You'd be a bold man to bet on what old sticks wouldn't dare, said Isher,
as the announcer struck his staff upon the tiles for order.
My lords and ladies, you are commanded to kneel at the approach of His Imperial Highness.
The announcer's voice echoed through the gilded doors and into the stuffy darkness of the anteroom, and also hooked a finger inside his stiff collar and tried to get some air in. His regalia was bloody stifling in more ways than one.
The King of Angland, Starrickland and Middleland, the Protector of Westport and Ufrith.
Orso twisted the considerable weight of the crown this way and that. Given the hours the royal jewellers had spent measuring his skull, one might have hoped they could have made the damn thing fit. Perhaps his head was simply the wrong shape for a crown. No doubt there were plenty who thought so.
His August Majesty Orso the First, High King of the Union!
The vast doors were heaved open, the crack of light down the middle gradually widening. Orso set his shoulders in what he hoped was a regal bearing, plastered on a smile, realized that was utterly inappropriate to the occasion, swapped it for a solemn frown, and stepped through. It was far from his first visit to the Lord's Round, of course. He remembered being mildly bored when his father had shown it to him as a building site, rather impressed when his father had shown it to him largely completed, then exceedingly bored when his father had presided over the first meeting of the Open Council there. But also had never seen it from this angle, the way an actor might a theatre. An ill-prepared understudy, in his case, suddenly called on to face an audience of hostile critics. The curved benches brimmed with lords and proxies, all weighty furs and weighty frowns and weighty chains of office. The original Lord's Round, the one Baez destroyed, had boasted only the one public gallery. The architects of the replacement had clearly felt a speaker might not be sufficiently overawed, so they had added another above. Both were now crammed to the rails with brightly dressed onlookers, frothing with anticipation at the delicious prospect of a stranger's downfall. There could easily have been 1,000 in attendance. There could easily have been more, all kneeling or sunk into curtsies at his approach, of course. But the aristocracy of the Union could kneel and radiate contempt simultaneously. They had centuries of practice at it.
"Bloody hell!"
he murmured under his breath. He could have sworn that by some acoustic sorcery it was carried about the entire vast chamber and echoed back to his ear as he shuffled across that lonely expanse of tiles to the high table, dragging a mighty weight of cloth of gold cloak behind him.
"Bloody hell, bloody hell, bloody hell."
He flinched as he felt hands reaching around his neck, but it was only Gorst unfastening the golden clasp and whisking the royal vestment away, while one of his legion of footmen did the same with the crown. Also wasn't even sure he knew the man's name. He wasn't even sure he had a name.
"Bloody hell, bloody hell, bloody hell."
Also cleared his throat as he sank into the great gilded chair, had a momentary panic as he wondered whether he should have been sitting somewhere else, then reminded himself that, however improbable it felt, he was king. He always got the biggest chair.
"All rise!"
bellowed the announcer, making him startle. There was a rustling wave through the crescents of benches as lords took their seats, a muttering and whispering and grumbling as they discussed the forthcoming business. Clerks dumped monstrous ledgers at either end of the table and heaved them thumping open. High Justice Bruckle took his seat on one side of Orso, Archlector Glockter was wheeled into place on the other and gave the great collection of lords and their proxies a suspicious glare.
"What's Isha doing over there?"
he murmured. As one of the foremost of Middleland's old nobility, he should have been sitting in the middle of the front row, but instead he had shifted to the right, beside the representatives from Angland, whispering in the ear of an unhappy-looking Leo Dan Brock. Bruckle raised his straggling brows.
"Isha and Brock? Intimate friends?" "Or close conspirators?"
Glockter nodded to the announcer, who lifted his staff and struck it on the tiles, filling the hall with crashing echoes.
"I call this meeting of the Open Council of the Union."
The announcer let it hang there as the noise gradually faded into weighty silence.
"To order!"
"Good morning, my lords and ladies."
Orso gave a smile that felt more like the accused trying to ingratiate himself with the judge than the judge himself.
"It is my honour to preside over this meeting. We have only one item of business today.
Your Majesty, if I may."
"The Open Council recognises Fedor Dan Isha,"
thundered the announcer. An instant interruption was the last thing Orso wanted, but he had to start as he meant to continue, generous and easy-tempered. Perhaps this was all part of Isha's plan to bring monarch and nobility together, after all.
"Of course, Lord Isha, proceed."
Isha pranced from his bench onto the tiled floor, like a man stepping from his favourite chair to give his fire a poke, the echoes of his highly polished boots snapping in the vast domed space above.
"Before we turn to today's sorry work, I hope my esteemed colleagues of the Open Council can join me for a moment in some happier business."
Glockter leaned towards Orso to mutter,
"Here's a bastard who loves the sound of his own voice."
"I wish to congratulate one of the most celebrated of our number, His Grace Leonald Dan Brock, the Lord Governor, and, if I may say, the undoubted saviour of Angland, on his forthcoming marriage."
An excited muttering swept the lords round. there could be few more eligible bachelors in the circle of the world, after all. Perhaps King Japo Mon Rogont Makato of Styria, although rumour had it he preferred swords to sheaths, as it were. Perhaps also himself, though his romantic reputation admittedly was less than glowing. But the dashing young Lord Governor of Angland would be right up there on the wish list of any ambitious young heiress. It was a roster with which also, thanks to his mother's constant quest for a bride, had more than a passing familiarity. He wondered absently which one of them had staged the coup.
"To none other!"
Isher gestured towards the lower public gallery, lords twisting around on their benches to peer upwards. And there she was, sitting at the rail. There was no mistaking that poise, that elegance, that offhand pride. Also could have sworn she was looking straight at him, but perhaps he was only desperate that she would.
"Then Lady Savine Dan Glockta."
It was not like being stabbed in the heart. It was much more gradual. An odd shock first. Some mistake, surely. Then, as the clapping began, a spreading realization, cold as the grave. It was like having one great stone after another loaded upon his chest. Her refusal had left no room for doubt, but also had not realized until that moment how hard he had been hoping. As a marooned sailor hopes for rescue. Now, even for a man as unrealistic as he was, hope was suddenly snuffed out. The whole chamber was filled with thunderous applause. The High Justice was leaning across him to congratulate the Archlector. Also became aware he was clapping himself, a limp-wristed flapping that made almost no noise at all. Clapping at his own funeral. Down on the front row, lords had clustered round an awkward-looking Leodan Brock to slap him on the back. There was no excuse for it, he knew. They had been involved once on a casual basis. She had given him a great deal of money, and he had come by a roundabout route to her rescue. He had somehow convinced himself that they loved each other, and she had sharply disabused him of the notion. It really should have come as no great surprise that she had chosen someone else. So why did he feel so utterly betrayed? It was surely a triumph. With one deft move, Savine had catapulted herself back to the very summit of the endlessly subsiding slag heap that was Union society. Those who had sneered at her with smug scorn, with self-righteous condescension, even with infuriating pity, those who had written her off as yesterday's woman, all gaped at her now in stunned envy. Perhaps they would never kneel to her and whisper, "Your August Majesty," but they would have no choice but to bow and say, "Your Grace." In the parlours of Adua, the ladies would wonder how Savine Dan Glockta, well past her most marriageable age, had snared the young lion. And they would whisper the kind of unkind rumours one only whispers about people too important to ignore. It was a triumph. And after the misfortunes, the reverses, not to mention the life-threatening horrors of the previous few months, it was one she sorely needed. She should have been revelling in the attention, relishing the jealousy of her many enemies, letting the world see just a hint of her self-satisfied smirk over her fan. But she did not care at all for the manner of the announcement. She had supposed that her engagement would be a matter of supreme indifference to Orso, but the intensity of the look he had given her told a different story. She wished she could somehow have let him know about it sooner, and she could not have trusted the self-appointed announcer less. Lord Isher was entirely too pleased with himself, too friendly with her husband-to-be, and too willing to share the glory of his wedding with them. As he smiled up towards her and gave a flourishing bow, she did not reckon him a man to give anything away. That, and a few chairs further down the gallery, Lady Wetterlant was glaring at her with unconcealed hatred. Clearly, it was not a happy day for everyone. But it was a triumph. Savine would be damned if she did not at least look like she was enjoying it. so she ignored Lady Wetterlant, simpered at the envious crowds with girlish innocence, blew a kiss down to her embarrassed husband-to-be, and wondered what the hell that snake Isher was up to.
"Are you sure about this, Your Majesty?" murmured Glockter. "We could postpone."
"Delay," offered Bruckle from the other side. "Always popular."
As the good wishes for the marriage of the year faded, Orso did his best to tear his thoughts away from Savine and back to the pressing business at hand. 300 or so of the most powerful and privileged noblemen in the land, accustomed to seeing the king and his closed council as their adversaries. If Isher had filled the lords round with friends, they were hiding their warm feelings towards him remarkably well. But if he postponed now, he would look a coward and a ditherer. He would confirm all the worst things they said about him, all the worst things he thought about himself.
"It's all arranged," he grunted.
Wetterlant would confess and beg for clemency, and also would offer a life sentence and look merciful as well as authoritative. Old enmities would be put aside, and the Union could take a collective step towards a better politics, just as Isher had promised.
"Let's get this over with."
"Bring in the accused," barked Glockter.
A side door was flung open with an echoing bang. There was a rustling as lords and proxies twisted to see, people in both public galleries leaning out dangerously far in their eagerness to glimpse the prisoner. The hall fell quiet. There was a scraping, tapping, clinking sound, and Fedor Dan Wetterlant emerged from the darkness. At first, Orso barely recognized the man. He had abandoned his fine clothes and dressed in penitent sackcloth. He had shaved off his curls and looked wan and hungry. One side of his face was badly bruised, scattered with fresh scabs. He wore only the lightest of chains, but he walked so as to make them rattle as loudly as possible. The pampered fop Orso had met in the House of Questions had transformed into an abused martyr. There was a collective gasp at the sight of him, then a shriek of rage from the public gallery. Looking up, Orso saw Lady Wetterlant standing at the rail, white with fury. There was a gradually increasing grumble from the lords and an ever more excited murmur from the onlookers as her son shuffled out before them.
"What the shit?"
hissed Orso through gritted teeth.
"What did I tell you?" whispered Isher in Leo's ear. "Next, one of the old leeches will offer a false confession, as though that closes the case. You'll see what passes for the king's justice these days."
"Your Majesty," someone shouted from near the back, "I most strongly protest. This man has been tortured. To treat a member of the Open Council in this manner."
The announcer struck his staff for order, but couldn't stem the mounting anger as Wetterlant was herded out onto the floor before the high table. Huygen shook his fist towards Glockter.
"Your Eminence, I am disgusted."
"To disgusting people, I readily confess," drawled the archlector. "But any fool can see I did not torture this man. He looks far too pleased with himself."
"Why is no one doing anything?" muttered Leo, gripping his throbbing thigh as he sat forward.
"Order, my lords, order!"
bellowed the announcer. If the atmosphere had been hostile when Orso arrived, it was rapidly swinging towards outright rebellion. He had an unpleasant sensation that the wheels were already coming off his plan as it careered down a steep slope at high speed and by no means towards a better politics. But he could hardly disembark now. High Justice Bruckle sat forward, clearing his throat.
"Fedor Dan Wetterlant, you stand accused most serious crimes."
The wattle beneath his chin wobbled as he fired off phrases, the clerk's pens scratching desperately as they struggled to record them for posterity.
"As a member of the Open Council, you have requested and now receive, in the sight of your peers, the King's justice. How do you plead?"
Wetterlant swallowed. also caught him glance up towards his mother. She gave him the faintest nod in return, her jaw clenched, a reassurance, perhaps, a nudge in the right direction, an urging to make the agreed-upon confession and take his agreed-upon punishment, and,
"I am innocent!"
shrieked Wetterlant in ringing tones. A collective gasp from the public gallery.
"I have been dreadfully wronged, fearfully abused. I am innocent of all charges!"
The hall erupted more angrily than ever.
"That fucker!" hissed Orso as he stared at Wetterlant. "That fucker!"
He looked to his supposed new best friend in the open council, but Isha had brows raised and palms helplessly spread as if to say, "I'm as astonished as anyone." In one moment, Orso's carefully laid plans went up in flames, and his hopes for a better politics sank into the depths. Now he realized why his father had always despised this place.
"Oh, dear," murmured Bruckle, uselessly.
Leo had never seen so clear an injustice. He sat with his jaw hanging open.
"Are we to hear no evidence?" called out Huygen.
"Will there be no witnesses?"
shouted Barazin, thumping a fat fist into a fat palm.
"Witnesses have been presented, exhaustively interviewed."
High Justice Bruckle struggled to make himself heard over the anger.
"The closed council is satisfied."
Unsurprisingly, that satisfied no one, and Wetterlant's mother was the least satisfied of all.
"I demand justice for my son," she screamed from the balcony. "The king's justice!"
Glockter held up a sheet of parchment, an illegible scrawl at the bottom.
"The accused hath confessed in full."
"I was forced,"
wailed the accused.
"Shut him up,"
snapped Bruckle, and Wetterlant cringed as the two practicals turned on him.
"There is no need to waste more of the open council's time," shouted Glockter.
"Waste our time," whispered Leo.
Isha had brows raised and palms helplessly spread, as if to say, "What did I tell you?" Behind him, in one of the great stained-glass panels, the open council rose up united against the tyranny of Morlick the Mad, and all because Arnold had the courage to stand first alone.
"Waste our time," said Leo.
Everyone else on the open council might be too craven to say what they could all see, but the young lion was no coward.
"Waste our time!" shouted Leo, lurching to his feet. Damn it, his leg hurt. It was as if he were being stabbed again, and he almost fell, had to clutch the back of the bench to steady himself, as the announcer struck his staff on the floor for order.
"The Open Council recognizes..."
"They know who I bloody am! This..."
Leo floundered for words. Everyone was staring at him, everyone in the whole great chamber. But this had to be done. For his father, for his country.
"This is a disgrace!"
"What is he doing?"
muttered Savine. Ladies were stuck to the rail all around her, staring down, eyes bright, fans fluttering like excited butterflies. Better drama than the theatre, and all free of charge.
"I'm no lawyer,"
called Leo, his Angland accent sounding particularly pronounced.
"But even I can tell this is a travesty!"
Savine watched with growing horror. A man who knows he is no lawyer should also know to keep his bloody mouth shut during a trial. But the young lion was not a man to keep his mouth shut.
"My father,"
he bellowed in an ever angrier and more broken voice,
"always told me union justice was the envy of the world."
Orso frowned up towards the public gallery, looking angrier than Savine had ever seen him. She shrank back from the rail, wondering whether her own history with the two men might be aggravating things. But the young lion was aggravating enough without her help.
"My friends, I am horrified. In the Lord's Round of all places... confessions got by torture?
Is this Union justice or Gurkish tyranny, Styrian trickery, Northern savagery?
Yes,
she heard Lady Wetterlant hiss with fierce delight. There were loud shouts of agreement from the lords. One might almost have called them cheers. Isher shrank silently into his seat, lips pressed carefully together, making sure there was as much empty bench between him and Leo as possible.
I would caution the Lord Governor to choose his next words carefully, growled Savine's father, and she found herself in total agreement.
A representative from the Angland delegation was plucking at the hem of Leo's jacket in an effort to pull him down, but Leo angrily slapped his hand away.
Sit down, you bloody fool,
Savine forced through gritted teeth, gripping the rail of the gallery, but the young lion would not sit down.
Call yourself a high justice?
He roared at Bruckle, leaning on the back of his bench with one hand and gripping hard at his thigh with the other.
This isn't justice! Your Grace,
growled Orso,
I would ask you to return to your seat.
I refuse,
snarled Leo, spit flying.
It's plain to everyone that you can't judge this man fairly. You're a puppet of the closed council.
You could almost see the jaws drop. A lady clapped a hand over her mouth. Another gasped. Another gave a kind of disbelieving giggle.
Oh, no, whispered Savine.
Orso had always thought himself the most easygoing man in the Union. He had floated over the scornful glances, the frequent insults, the scurrilous rumours. Most of them had, after all, been more or less fair. He'd never imagined he even really had a temper. But perhaps he'd never before had anything to be angry about. Whether it was the ongoing frustration of the throne, the entrenched hostility of everyone in the chamber, Wetterlant's bare-faced gall, Isher's two-faced chicanery, Brock's naive impudence, or Savine's forthcoming nuptials that infuriated him most, the combination produced a feeling of utter rage such as he had never felt in his life.
Colonel Gost,
he managed to choke out, his throat so tight he could hardly form the words.
Remove Lord Brock from the chamber.
Gost had no expression on his slab of a face as he pounded across the tiled floor towards Leo. The open council didn't rise united, as they had to support Arnold in the legend. Maybe he'd spoken better than Leo, or Morlick had been madder than Orso. Or men's principles had become so greasy they tended to slip from their grasp at the worst moments. Or maybe the legend was balls. Everyone stared, but not one arse left its seat. Leo took a shuffling step back and nearly fell onto his bench, grimacing at the stab of pain in his leg.
Now, hold on a...
Gorst caught two fistfuls of Leo's jacket. Once, as a boy, he'd gone swimming in the sea near Ufrith and been taken by a sudden swell and dragged off his feet. He'd thrashed with all his strength, but the current had sucked him helpless over rocks, swept away by a force of nature far greater than he would ever be. Being dragged bodily from his bench by Bremerdan Gorst felt similar. The man's strength defied belief. It felt as if he could have flung Leo from the chamber with one throw. He marched him up the aisle of the Lord's Round, through the coloured splashes of light, past gaping lords, Leo's feet kicking uselessly at the steps, tangled with his badly balanced commemorative sword.
I'm going, squawked Leo. I'm going!
But he might as well have complained to the tide. Gorst showed no emotion as he bundled Leo from the hall, across the antechamber, then out of the Lord's Round into the daylight. He finally set Leo down with exaggerated care beside a statue of Casimir the Steadfast, feeling much the same sense of awe and relief as he had when the sea finally washed him up on that beach near Ufrith as a boy, but with an added helping of crippling embarrassment. Gorst wasn't even out of breath.
I hope you realise, he squeaked, that this was not personal, Your Grace.
He gave an awkward smile.
Please, pass my respects to your mother.
What?
Muttered Leo, but Gorst was already striding back up the steps. The doors were shut on the young lion with a crash, and silence pressed in.
Enough of this pantomime! Snarled Orso.
The legs of his gilded chair gave a tortured shriek as he stood, obliging everyone in the chamber to wobble uncertainly onto their knees. He turned towards Wetterlant.
I find you guilty of rape and murder, he said, in the same icy tone his own mother might have used.
But...
Wetterlant stared over at Isha, as though this was not at all what he had been expecting, but Isha had folded his arms and was meeting no one's eye.
I am a member of the Open Council.
The members of this exalted body must be exemplars, snapped Orso, glowering at the silent lords, held to higher standards, not lower, and subject to the same justice as any other man. The king's justice. My justice.
And he stabbed at his chest with a finger.
There is no question in my mind of your guilt. I have given you every chance to show remorse, and you have slapped my hand away. I therefore sentence you to death by hanging. Take him down.
No!
Shrieked Lady Wetterlant from above.
You can't do this,
her son wailed as he was dragged away.
I'm an innocent man. I was compelled,
he screeched over his shoulder, bucking and twisting.
Isha, mother, you can't let them do this.
Get rid of him,
hissed Glockter, and the practicals bundled him through the side door and flung it shut with an echoing bang.
You'll pay for this!
Lady Wetterlant was screaming.
I'll see you pay, every one of you. Take your hands off me.
She was viciously beating at a guardsman with her fan as he struggled to manhandle her from the gallery. Orso could not bear to stay a moment longer. He snatched up the crown by one pearl-studded prong, turned on his heel, and strode disgustedly for the door. Caught by surprise, the Knights of the Body only had it open a crack when he got there, obliging him to wriggle through sideways. He flung the crown angrily over his shoulder and left one of his footmen juggling the damn thing, stomped out into the daylight and off towards the palace, shocked bystanders scraping out of his way, his entourage clattering after. Bruckle's gown flapped at his ankles as he hurried to catch up.
Well, Your Majesty... That was... Don't! Snapped Orso.
They walked in silence, one of the wheels of Glockter's chair catching on every turn with a regular squeak, 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 which might as well have been a saw applied directly to Orso's nerves. He wished he had some honest men beside him. He wished he could have given Malma a seat on the closed council, but he had hanged Malma and 200 others, and fully earned the scorn and distrust of every commoner in Middleland. Now, in trying to find a compromise, he had somehow made enemies of the entire nobility, too, with the Union's most celebrated hero foremost among them. And that was without even touching on the man's forthcoming marriage to the woman also quite evidently still loved.
"What a fucking disaster!" he snarled.
The High Justice tried to smile, but it ended up a wince.
I suppose it could have been worse. How exactly?
The Archlector raised one brow.
Well, nothing's on fire.
Savine hurried down the steps as fast as her shoes would allow.
Leo!
She called. Gorst had left him upright, at least, for all he was leaning against a statue's pedestal, face twisted with evident pain, and his jacket in some disarray.
"What the hell were you thinking, you thick shit?"
was what she was burning to ask, but instead she stuffed her voice with concern.
"Are you hurt?" "Hurt? I was bloody humiliated!" "You humiliated yourself, dunce, and me by association," was what she wanted to say,
The happy news of their engagement was entirely overshadowed now, but she bit her lip and waited for him to blow himself out.
The whole thing was a mockery, and your father...
I know. She spoke as softly as she could, for all she wanted to slap some sense into him. People were starting to emerge from the Lord's Round, eager for more scandal. She should have been parading the square like a peacock. Instead, she was scurrying to limit the damage.
We should get out of the way.
She came close to tug his jacket smooth, before it gets busy out here. He nodded, then winced, all his weight on one leg. His old wound was clearly troubling him far more than he pretended.
I left my cane in the chamber.
That is why you have me. She took his elbow, one hand draped on top, while the other held it firmly underneath so she could hold him up, while it looked as if she were leaning upon him, and steer him away from the square of marshals towards the quieter ways, while it looked as if he were steering her. This is politics. She smiled at passers-by as if this was the most wonderful afternoon of her life. You have to be subtle. There is a way to do things.
So I should just sit there?
That's why they have seats in the Open Council.
Watch a man convicted just because of who he is.
I have it on good authority he couldn't be guiltier, said Savine, but Leo was not listening.
That high-handed bastard! To have the Lord Governor of Angland dragged out like a beggar!
What did you expect? She snapped, digging her fingers into his arm.
You gave him no choice. You're taking his side? We're supposed to be... Leo!
She turned his face towards her so he had to look into her eyes. She spoke to him without fear or anger, with simple authority, the way one speaks to a dog that has soiled the carpet.
Sides? Think about what you are saying. He is the High King of the Union. His is the only side that counts. He cannot allow himself to be defied before the foremost nobleman of the land. Men have ended up in the House of Questions for less.
He stared at her, breathing hard. Then suddenly all the defiance drained out of him.
Shit. You're right.
Of course. Was what she wanted to say, but she kept her silence and tidied a loose strand of hair behind his ear and let him get there by himself.
Shit!
He closed his eyes, utterly dismayed.
I've made myself look a fool.
She turned his face back towards her again.
You have made yourself look passionate and principled and brave.
And an utter fool, it hardly needed saying.
All the qualities people admire in you, all the qualities I admire in you. I've offended the king. What should I...
That is why you have me. She led him on, while appearing to follow, talking softly as though they were trading sweet nothings.
I will speak to my father and arrange for you to apologize to His Majesty. You will smile and be the charming but hot-headed young hero you are. You will show how difficult it is for you to swallow your pride, but you will swallow it, every last bitter drop. You will explain that you are a soldier, not a courtier, and say your manly passions got the better of you, but that it will never happen again. And it will never happen again.
She smiled as they walked. The Union's most admired couple, so very well matched and so much in love. She had smiled through far worse, after all. She kept her eyes ahead, but she was conscious that he was looking at her all the way.
I think, he murmured, leaning towards her, that I might be the luckiest man in the Union.
Don't be ridiculous, she patted his elbow. You're the luckiest man in the world.